Father, may you encourage us as we open your word. May it be used of you in our study this morning to edify and bless us, because we see a God of grace that was functioning in the Old Testament as well as in the New. Thank you for this privilege. May your Spirit be our teacher, in Christ's name. Amen. I suppose that this message may have been the one I should have done last week. And the one I did last week should have been this week. Because it seems like a negative second message, and it maybe should have been the first message with a positive second. But the way we've been going through 2 Peter 2 has been doing the Peter passage and then going back and working the Old Testament so we have a better picture of what's going on. If we didn't have 2 Peter 2, we would not understand a lot about Lot. Because 2 Peter 2 tells us some things, and we've seen the use of the word righteous. He's called righteous Lot. He is called righteous in verse 8, and he has a righteous soul in verse 8. And so Lot is identified that way. You do not find any word for righteousness in the Genesis accounts of Lot, nor do you find it anywhere else. It's interesting, when Lot is referred to, and we looked at it back in the Sodom and Gomorrah material, when he's looked at in the New Testament, in the Gospel of Luke, he says, as in the days of Lot, and they were doing their thing. They were eating, and they were drinking, and they were marrying, and they were building buildings. It's similar to what went on with Noah, and is used in the end of Matthew. So just the normal routines of life, and then all of a sudden they had a major catastrophe called fire from heaven and brimstone that came down from heaven. But it's interesting, because you see so many positive things when if you'd never met Lot before and didn't know the story of Sodom and Gomorrah quite, you would think maybe he's a guy you'd like to meet. I mean, he's this righteous guy, but if you read Genesis, you're not sure you want to meet him, because he seems to be a pretty gullible guy. I mean, he picks a place to live when he had the choice. I'm not sure he picked it because it was better than what Abram had. What is interesting to me, both of them had herds, generally of sheep and cattle. And, it didn't make a lot of difference when you had grazing land. I think he may have figured he could support his family better. And we remember, and we'll be looking at that in a minute. But in the Old Testament, we have the historical account of Lot and what went on. And we're going to deal with some of the details about Lot, just so you have some background in Old Testament information. I know you got a lot of notes. We're going to fly, because some of them, we can do them point in a hurry, just so you know about Lot. And so we read 2 Peter, and then it's almost as though Lot's offspring were no problem. And by that I mean his two sons that we know came into being as a result of all of these things. And those two sons, Ammon, or Ben-Ammi, which became the Ammonites, and the Moabites, were a thorn in Israel's side. And it's really kind of interesting how that worked. And we'll be doing this at least one more time in the second chapter, and that is, we'll be down to Balaam, and we'll be looking at Balaam. When we get to Balaam, we got the problem with the Moabites and the Ammonites, because they hired old Balaam to come and curse Israel so they could get rid of them. It was kind of the idea later. And so there is an issue there. But the divine perspective was, he was an Old Testament pre-law saint that was counted to be righteous before God. And we know why. Because he had those two words. He was worn out by their unrighteousness of those people living in Sodom. And he was tormented by what they were doing. And we'll see a bit of a conundrum when we look at some of the Old Testament material, which is where we're headed. It's interesting, Lot's position in Sodom. He was an established resident in Sodom. It says, when he went down to the plain, the cities of the plains, he set his tent facing Sodom. At first, next thing you know, we get the New Testament, it's very clear. He was an inhabitant, and he was in Sodom, in among them, in them. You have two N's used in 2 Peter. So he was an established resident. In fact, in the Old Testament, we find out when the two angels arrived in Sodom, they arrived, and where did they find Lot? He was sitting in the gate. And as one who was sitting in the gate, that means he was in a position of leadership. It doesn't mean he was the mayor. It means he was in a position among those who would be called the elders of the people. So he was involved in judicial kinds of decisions and leadership decisions. And so they chose to permit a righteous man who did not behave as they did, nor would let them behave as they did toward himself, and they let him be there. It's interesting sometimes, that foxhole kind of thing where you ask a Christian to take care of your money when you go into battle because he's the only one you could trust, though you hate his guts. And that's the way it was. There are stories one after another in different wars where that's happened. They would go to a Christian, here's a letter to my wife or my mother or whatever, and here's all the money. Make sure they get it. And they give it to the Christian in that matter if they die in battle. And that's kind of, I think, what's going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. The problem with Lot was when he knew that God was going to punish Sodom and Gomorrah, he had issues with family and friends. And we're going to talk a little bit about his family. You know, he didn't have a little family. He had a big family. But we don't know how big it was. You know, plurals tell us two or more. Yeah, that's really the way it is. Hebrew plurals are usually two or more. They use duals when things occur in pairs. So, you know, if a dual was used of kids, it would mean you had twins. But plurals are normal. You could have two or more on that. And so that helps us understand a little bit about where we're going. And then if it wasn't for the New Testament, we wouldn't have a clear picture. And that may affect the way we look at things. You realize, yes, Lot is mentioned in other passages of Scripture, or his sons. But when we get through with Lot out on the mountain, Lot's gone. We have a few illustrations, but Lot is no longer on the scene. You have the Ammonites and you have the Moabites, but Lot is not referred to except to illustrate a few things elsewhere in Scripture. And usually it involves these two sons as we relate to them. I don't think I want to preach the bulletin today. So I wondered why I couldn't keep my notes up. Okay. Now, Genesis chapter 11 is where we're going to start. Now, we're not going to read all of the passages I have in the notes. I just want to trace some things so you have the background. Genesis chapter 11 talks about the pedigree of Lot, that is his ancestry. He is of the line of Shem. After the flood, of course, we're well reminded, the three sons of Noah were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And so he's of the Semitic or Shemite line, and we can see that in chapter 11 of Genesis and at verse 10. He's of the lineage of Shem. If I can get my pages to work. I debated whether to bring my old Bible or not. You can see it in 11:10. These are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old, and it goes on. And so he has a list of the generations of Shem in the genealogy here. We go to Terah in verse 26. Terah, I could read more, and I'm not, because but Terah was 119 years old and 25. In verse 25, he begat sons and daughters. And Terah lived 70 years. He begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. I don't think these were triplets, but it's interesting. He lives to a certain age. It's interesting here because generally you don't have three names listed at an age. But he's emphasizing the writer and the Holy Spirit wants us to go through the lineage that relates to Terah. You have Abram and Nahor. Verse 27, you have the breakout of the generations. Let's read from 27 so we can see. These are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran begat Lot. So that gives us the immediate description of where and who was involved. Lot is the son of Haran, a brother of Abram. And it goes on, and Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. So this son died in Ur of the Chaldees. Now there's an interesting speculation here concerning Haran, because you realize Terah takes Abram. Well, let's just read on down. Verse 29, Abram and Nahor took unto them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. Milcah is the daughter of Haran. Now, as you start putting two and two together, talk about robbing the cradle here. He took his brother's daughter to wife. We have no idea how many years are in between, age-wise. What we do know, and what is interesting, is that there's quite a span in years between, and I have a little bit of that. I'll try to point it out when we go. We'll get there. I'm trying to avoid saying too much. But anyway, Nahor's wife was Milcah. But Sarai was barren and had no child. And Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. Now, it's kind of interesting to see Haran. They go to Haran, and I was debating whether to play with the maps, but the maps didn't have everything I wanted for the overhead, so I decided we wouldn't do that. But they're out in the kind of the edge of the desert. It's on the edge of Iraq, they spent the time there. It was Terah's intention to go to Canaan, but he stopped at Haran. Now, was this where his son had lived? Was his son back in Ur when he died? Remember, Haran died. Was this a community named for him? Was this a family place? We don't know. I've heard people speculate that Haran lived there, and he went back to visit family, and he died there. This morning's obituary. It was interesting in the obituary section. A fellow from our Portland area was with his family doing a annual family trip to Southern Oregon to do. I mean, they had things they did annually at this time of the year, and he died there. And so he was away, but he was not from that part of the world. He visited there on a regular basis, but. And so they had the announcement for a funeral in Portland. In that, so this may have been. We just don't know. I mean, similarity is not always, or identity isn't always identity. I mean, a place and a person often are different. And so we need to keep that in mind as we relate to this. And so Milcah was Lot's sister, or half-sister. We don't know. So she's his aunt. Sounds like my wife's family. Pat's uncle was her grandpa. That's the way it worked? I guess I explained that now that I've dropped that one, I'm wasting time when I do this. What happened, her dad's oldest brother, of course, was her uncle, and he married Pat's mother's mother. And so so that was, married her grandmother, so in a sense she was her step-grandpa. He was, I mean. And it was rather interesting. I had to figure this all out when I got in the family. One of those things that you inherit. And so, anyway. Okay, let's go on. They go from Ur of the Chaldees to the land of Canaan. Now, it's interesting. In verse 1 of chapter 12, it says that Jehovah had said unto Abraham, get thee out of thy country, from thy kindred, from thy father's house, unto the land that I will show thee, and I will make thee a great nation. I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. Now you notice what I was doing. I was playing the King James game. And that is, I'm reading the these. They're all second masculine singulars. God did not tell Abram while he was in Ur to go with Papa. He did not tell him to take Lot. He didn't tell him. It was, you guy, you go. So we've already read how he got to Haran. He went with Papa. Terah took him to Haran. And so he went there, and I just, you know, the intention was to go to Canaan. But they stopped there, and what happens? They lived there until Terah dies. And then, Terah dies in verse 32 of chapter 11, and the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. So it's kind of interesting when you see that. So Abram is this young, spry kid of 75 years, takes off after Papa dies and heads for Canaan. It's kind of interesting when we look at the way things go. I almost handed you out a little list of all the ages that are related to this. I've got a little bit of it in the notes in a minute. He leaves at 75, and we know that in verse 5. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all of their substance, all their stuff, that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran, and they went forth into the land of Canaan. I was 75 years old in verse 4. I just read the next verse. Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot with him. And Lot was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. So his father died, no longer need to be there, so he takes off and heads for Canaan in that matter. And so Terah was 205 years old, and we do have, again, Abram, we don't have a mention of Terah's wife or wife's. Probably plural. It's interesting to think about that, and we won't pursue it. And so Lot goes with him, and so they get in the land in chapter 13, and you have a problem. I noticed an interesting typo in my notes, and that is, this is not a political statement concerning Sarah Palin in this matter. It's just a typo in your notes. Some of you know what? Thief. Under D1, it says, Lot chose to go to the Palin of the Jordan. I looked at that and I said, oh boy, I better mention that in a hurry or somebody's going to get me. And you can see, just, you know, the fingers, they don't do the walking very well sometimes. That was one of them. So they had this problem, a controversy. Let's talk about history. There was famine in the land. Lot and Abram, and everything they had goes down to Egypt. Abram goes down there and he tells Pharaoh that this woman that is with him, he's 75 years old. You know how old she was? 65 years old. He says, she's my sister. And Pharaoh thought she was a pretty attractive woman. And so he wanted to take her and add her to his harem. And he gets in trouble over it. And the next thing you know, when the famine seems to be over in the land, there's this controversy, and it's necessary to admit that she's, you know, his wife. And so they leave, and they go back to the land. In that interval, then they find out both of them come out wealthy, Lot and Abram. Abram by far more. If you read this, every time Abram, who became Abraham, got in trouble, he came out more wealthy. He did it in Egypt, and he did it with Abimelech after this. Did the same thing. Said, she's my sister. And because he was afraid, and fortunately, Abimelech, they ended up with some major health issues because of that, and he kind of figured out something was going on. And so again, Abram comes out more wealthy than he was when he went in. And just pretty interesting. But Lot had a lot of cattle. So they had the war between the herdsmen in chapter 13. And that war between the herdsmen, Abram said, you pick which distance I'll go the other, I mean, which direction you want to go, and we'll go just the opposite. So Lot picked the cities of the plain and went there. And in Genesis 13:12, it says that he pitched his tent toward Sodom when he went down. And so in 12, it says, Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent unto or toward Sodom. Unto or toward Sodom. It was interesting that he was, I mean, that is so clear in the text. Next thing you know, he's living in Sodom, and Abram dwelt in Canaan. Now, I want to make a note here that we need to remember. When they left the land of Ur, they were idolaters. Now, you don't find that in the account in Genesis, but you do in Joshua chapter 24, and it's very clear in 24:2. And Joshua said to the people, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, your fathers dwelt on the other side of the river. Some have translated that floodplain. It's the word Nahar, which is a normal word for river. It could be floodplain. I understand the Middle West has a lot more floodplain than it did the other day with that, because they opened some Cajun country, ended up with problems. At least they had a little time. I think they still do in some parts, where they're able to take everything and they're never going to see anything again probably in their previous properties. So on the other side of the river in old time, or from Olam, even Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods. They were idolaters. They were idolaters. So when Terah came out and Abram came out and Lot came out, they were a bunch of idolaters. I am absolutely certain that when they went, as people who followed other idols, they probably had mementos in carrying some idols with them. That was not uncommon in that. Whether they would be what you call teraphim later. Teraphim were gods that were used as like titles to property. Which is another subject for another day in that matter. So they were idolaters, and don't forget that. And Joshua reminds them they were a bunch of idolaters when they came out of Egypt. What did they come out of Egypt as? A bunch of reluctant people to follow a guy who says, Jehovah is your God. And when you ask who he is, say, I am that I am has sent me, the eternally existent one. Yet, where did they get all of the stuff to make the golden calf? Did they have any conscience problems with making the golden calf? I don't think so, and most of what they had were objects that related to their idolatry. And so, we need to be careful as to how we relate them. Now, I tried to figure out why I want to put this in this outline, and I did in my outline. I said last week we're going to talk about Lot's being saved with an Old Testament salvation before Abram. And so I put that in your notes. Here, and I probably could have put it in other places. The statement in 2 Peter chapter 2 tells us he was a righteous while he was dwelling in Sodom. We know that Lot is counted as righteous from the time that at least he moved to Sodom. We know that much. But he was dwelling in Sodom. He was oppressed all the time, it says, and we translated it, day in and day out. And it's just his ek, preposition between day out of day, in that matter. He was oppressed because they were, remember we had a weird word for lawless, they did not respect the laws of nature. They weren't interested in respecting the laws of nature or of conscience. Their behavior was so great, that it was so negative in that matter, and he was tormented. Last week we saw the verb tormented by their lawless works. I've been having an interesting ongoing discussion with Grant. He's in Romans 5 today, or was in Romans 5. He finished his Sunday school class by now, in that matter. But in Romans 5, the problem of lawlessness when there was no law, if God doesn't impute it as sin as sin when there's no law. And he was in that passage. And he said, you've got to have a law to be lawless. And so I took him over here to 2 Peter to show it to him. He said, well, I've got an illustration. I still can't figure it out. And so I let him lose sleep over during the night on that one, which he promised me he was going to. It wasn't the hot sauce he put on his chips the night before. It was going to keep him awake. It was going to be, he said, between the two of them, he probably wouldn't sleep well at night. And now the time interval, let's talk time. Abram was saved in Genesis 15 and verse 4. He was saved there. He believed God and it was counted to him for righteousness. So Abraham was seen as righteous by God at that point in time in Genesis 15. He left Haran at age 75 in 12:5. It's interesting, in 16:5, he was 86 at the birth of Ishmael. Now, why do I say that? You have 11 years between the departure from Haran, until Ishmael is born. So there's an 11-year window. In that window, they've gone to Egypt for a short time and have come back. Now let's make it a fat short time. And so let's say it's a 10-year window. We give them a year in Egypt. And in that time, something has happened. Lot ends up in Sodom. Now if you go to the other side of it in 14, I'm getting the right chapter in my head. In 14 you can start adding up years related to Sodom. You have four kings that defeat Sodom. It's interesting there, when you look at it, the kings that were involved, all these guys that are fun to pronounce, Amraphel, Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goyim, or nations. And they defeat the five kings of Sodom. In that time, it's interesting because it doesn't fit into our 10 or 11 year window. Because it says in this passage, verse 4, it says, 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and the 13th year they rebelled, and the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him and smote the Rephaim, and goes on and on and talks about it. And so he comes, and what happens in that time? In verse 12, it says they came, and they took the goods of Sodom and the cities of the plain, and they took Lot. And you see that in 12. And so it's interesting, 14 years doesn't fit well into the 10-year window we have. And it seems that this is what had happened before Lot came. That would mean that Lot had arrived in the cities of the plain, which were slaves, essentially, or servants to other peoples. And I think that makes sense to me when I see it. They were as unrighteous as ever, but Lot came in that time. And so that 10-year window, because 16 follows 15, gives us some idea that he probably was a saved man for nearly 10 years before Abram had it counted to him for righteousness. Because he's called righteous while living there. It could be less. But any way we look at it, it had to be before in that matter. And so I believe that that's the case when we see him in this matter. And Abram believed God after he had delivered Lot and the stuff of Sodom, the goods and all the goods. How do I know that? Chapter 15 starts out in verse 1. And it says, after these things. After these things. What are these things? The issue with taking his servants and fetching Lot. He had 318 servants, verse 14 of the previous chapter, that were trained in warfare, and they went and defeated the kings, rounded up the goods of Sodom, bring them back, and bring Lot back. And so that was an event. They meet Melchizedek and offer a sack of tithe, as it were, of the booty. He didn't tithe a nickel. It did not cost Abraham a nickel to tithe to Melchizedek. It was of the goods, and we go there in some other classes, as in the priesthood class when we talk about it there. And you have the alls that are marked. There are five alls in this section. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's say 4. There may be 5 in that. So, I think that Lot was saved before Abram from God's point of view, thanks to 2 Peter. That's just where we're at. Now let's pick back up on our little journey. He goes to Sodom. He pitches his tent that way. By the time you get on into verse 19, to chapter 19, Sodom is his home, and he's there. In 19:1 it says, and there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them. He bowed himself down with his noses toward the ground. And I know your translation didn't say that. Mine did, though. But it's translated face. And whenever you see the word nose, it's always in the dual. And so that's why I translated noses. Now that was, and by dual, it's talking about two parts of the nose. And so it's always affine. So it's always a dual. And so he falls on his face. If you're going to scoop dirt, I guess that's one of the ways to do it. And that's what happened in that. And it's a nice little dual form at that point. So here he was sitting in the gate. And I've mentioned it already. It means he had a position of some kind of authority. He was considered one of the elders. He was one of the leaders. He was the one who gave better advice. And so he had become a position, entered a position with the people of Sodom, yet God says he was righteous in spite of it all. I've often wondered if Lot didn't take that position because he wanted to do what he could to encourage some righteousness on the part of the Sodomites. I just don't know. I just see him there. And when we see him, we know. And you could trace, look up the word gate, sa'er is a Hebrew word. And if you look up the word gate, it's interesting how often in the New Testament somebody is in the gate doing something, including kings, when we understand that idea. So that's where he was sitting in the gate. And let's talk about his progeny just for interest's sake. In chapter 19, in verse 12, we mentioned this before on the way through, and the men, these angels, said unto Lot, "Hast thou here any besides, son-in-law, and thy sons, and thy daughters? Whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place." So it's interesting here, he has son-in-law. It is a singular here in verse 12. So that looks like one son-in-law, and you have plural sons, so there are two or more sons, and you have plural daughters, which are two or more daughters. Okay, now, it says, "For we have destroyed this place, for the cry of them is waxing great before the face of Jehovah, and Jehovah will set us, has sent us to destroy it." And Lot went out and spake to his sons-in-law, and that is a plural. And so it seems like there was probably a dominant son-in-law. The possibility of that singular might be this was one who was sitting with him in the gate. We don't know. And so we know there were sons-in-law. So that means he has two daughters that are married to two sons-in-law, at least two. So that's two. Then he has sons. We saw that in verse 12. And that means that he had at least two sons. That adds up to four. Then when he leaves, he has two virgin daughters. And that's six kids at least. See, that's the way it adds up. Now what happens when he confronts these sons-in-laws in verse 14? They think he's joking. It says, "Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, Up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he seemed as one that laughed unto his sons and daughters." It was joking. It's our word for laugh, that he was joking. And it may have been he was so taken up, they just totally misread him. And so they just didn't pay any attention. In that matter, in this this perspective. So, I told you, he had a problem with family. You realize when he leaves, he has at least four offspring left in Sodom. At least four. His two virgin daughters go with him. And his wife. And so we see that picture when we look at it. Oh, I wanted to say something. It says, married in the King James. In the Jewish translation, this is, showed you where I wander in my studies. In a Jewish translation, the footnote says that they were about to be married. And so the two daughters then went, so they cut the numbers down. And it's really funny because it's a calactive participle, which is a continuous action. They had been taken ones. Is what it was, but I laughed when I read the Jewish translation. And so you have them leave, so he had at least six children, and two-thirds of his kids at least remained in Sodom to be destroyed. Was there a reason for his reluctance to go? He certainly was reluctant to go. Read verse 16 in chapter 19. "And he lingered." The word linger is one of those forms that Don is getting very acquainted with. It's an hithpeel. It's a reflexive form. He was having fun with that, so I have to give him a bad time in this matter. And he was delaying for himself. He has family. He wants to spend a few more minutes trying to persuade them to leave. And they say, "You better get moving." And so what do? They were strong upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hands of his daughters. And the word is translated, lay hold of. They exercised. They caused to be strong. These are spirit beings. In other words, they forcibly remove them from Sodom. The word that's laid hold of, it can be translated that way, but it's chazak, to be strong. And it's causative here. The Lord being merciful unto him. Every time you see the word mercy in the Old Testament, no, it's not our New Testament definition of mercy. The word that's used here is a word that it's a feminine noun. It means to pity or to have a kind of compassion. It's the root hamel. And so he was showed pity upon Lot. And they, the two angels, brought him forth and set him outside of the city. So they take him outside of the city. And so he's forced to leave the city of Sodom. And it's rather interesting, when we look at verse 29, it says, it tells us why, that he was removed. It's interesting how God sets this up. We don't know this from 2 Peter. I mean, because when you read this, it says, it came to pass, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt. Isn't that interesting? The first indication, because of Abraham. Abraham must have had a close relationship to this nephew of his. It's kind of interesting. There's another word that's used of Lot's relationship to Abram. You know what that is? Ah, brother. Brother. And that's one of those illustrations that we use, is that a brother isn't always an immediate brother. It's a blood relative, a male blood relative. And so that's what is going on here. And so when we get to, now I'm going to jump back to verse 17 of chapter 19. And when it came to be, when they had brought them forth abroad, that he said, escape for your life. The word life is the word soul. Escape for your soul, which is, I like to say, I like to say soul is really, it's an appropriate way to translate a life. It's not the normal word for life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou, or don't stand in all the plain. The word stay is the word stand if you're looking at your King James. It's the word amad, to stand. Don't stand there, keep moving. Don't stop and stand. Escape to the mountain, lest you be swept away or snatched away, consumed. There are plenty of words in the Hebrew for consume, and this isn't one of them. This is a word that has the idea of snatched away. I think what he's doing here is saying, lest you be taken directly to Sheol. And swept away or snatched away are the way that that word is used. And Lot said unto them, these two, oh, not so, my Lord. No, no, no. I don't know if I'd have the nerve of having, you know, I'd have angel fingerprints on my wrist. And I would have known. And so he said, not so. Behold, now thy servant has found favor in your sight, and thou hast magnified your loving kindness, another mercy word, but this is loving kindness. You've made great your loving kindness, which thou hast showed to me, in saving my soul, saving my life, causing to save my life. Oops, just a second. Okay. Well, I have to look at that again. And I do not have the power to escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. He says, go to the mountain. He says, I don't have the strength to go to the mountain. You know, I don't know. Like I say, those fingerprints on his arm should tell him there's something important here. And so he's trying to wheel and deal with the angel, these angels, about what he's to do. So what does he do? He said, they said, get away from the cities of the plain. Behold, now this city is near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape there, for it is a little one. And my soul shall live. Okay, and he said unto him, see, I have accepted thee, let me get my root, I have accepted your face concerning this thing. Also, I will not overthrow this city, for which thou hast spoken. Haste thee, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you come there. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. Seems to me I've seen that before. That city. You're right. It's one of the five cities of the plain. It's a little one. That's what Zoar means. Small. And so there was a king of Zoar. Let me go back to where I have my list. Back, clear back to the events in, in chapter 14. And you'll see in verse 2, it has the five kings of the plain. The last one is the king of Bela, which is Zoar. It was called Bela before. And so here there was an existing city of the plain. So this is spared us. Really an interesting thing when I read, I followed along through this just for fun and some Jewish material. And they said, and there is a tradition, and I didn't write it down or check it, and that is that after Lot had fled Zoar, that God had an earthquake and swallowed Zoar. But we have records of Zoar later. So it's kind of an interesting circumstance. So he flees there. He makes a move to another city of the plain. The other four cities of the plain are zapped. And he's interfering with God's plan for judgment. But God says, I will not judge until you are there. You're holding up the plan. And so that agreement and dealing seem to pay off in a sense. And so what happens? When we get to verse 23, we have the problem with Sodom and Gomorrah. When the sun came out upon the earth, when Lot entered Zoar, then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven, and he overthrew those cities, number one, all the plain, number two, all the inhabitants of the city, number three, and all that grew upon the ground, number four. That's called pretty total destruction. There was no life of any kind, vegetation, or biological life of any kind as a result of this overthrow. And it came from heaven. Again, there's that issue we talked about last round, and that is with Sodom and Gomorrah, what was it, 3 weeks ago, whether it was a volcanic eruption where they dumped in that area, it ruined a highly fertile land. That land on the south end of the Dead Sea, and depending on how far down, was totally ruined, and was generally good for nothing until they had tourism and potash plants. To pull the chemicals out in modern history. Now, let's look at verse 1930. And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain. And his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. Was he afraid to dwell in Zoar? Well, there are several possibilities. Was he afraid of the inhabitants of Zoar? Was he afraid? On your printer the wrong way. I'm print two sides on this way it is. I'm on this roll and they got double sides that I didn't intend to. For fear of further judgment. God said he was going to deal with the cities of the plain. Was he afraid of that? Was he afraid for his daughters? Zoar was part of the cities of the plain. Probably had a similar kind of morality. And so he may have had a fear there, we don't know. Or could it have been a fear for the Nephilim? That is the fallen ones we've talked about before. Those progeny of the sons of God and the daughters of Adam, of man. We don't know why he was afraid. But he went and he lived in a cave. So Lot became a caveman. And he went. And it's just interesting when we read this story in this. Well, that's not the end of Lot. He's living in the cave. He has two daughters. And again, it comes with a bunch of questions that we need to ask in this matter. Now, the two daughters conspire against their father. They say, we need offspring. And so they conspire, and they make their father drunk, and they're involved in an incestuous relationship. And, I mean, the biology of this just kind of makes my head spin. For one thing, they needed males. They wanted, I mean, a male heir. How would they know? How could the two of them, in a two-day period, be certain that they were fertile myrtles at that right time? And so the question, you have questions that relate to this as to how it worked. But it's clear what happens here as we read. And let's go ahead and pick up at verse 30 of chapter 19. And Lot went up from Zoar, out of Zoar, and his two daughters with him. And let's go to 31. The firstborn said unto the younger, our father is old, and there is not a man in the earth to come in unto us after the manner or the way of all the earth. Interesting the use of the word derech, the word for way, in that passage. It is used in Proverbs of the way of a man with a male with a female. The same derech word is used there in that. And so this, and they said, now let's ask the question right here. Why? Did they do this to preserve his line? They're two virgin daughters. They say there's no man to come unto them. They know that their brothers are dead and their sisters are dead, and any offspring they had. Remember Sodom, if they had any children, they were dead in that matter. I mean, this was worse than barbecue. This was incineration in Sodom in this matter. Did they believe that the males were all destroyed? So they would not have that possibility. Or did they think that the earth was destroyed? Now, let me see if I can find this quickly. Told you I've been reading Jewish stuff. This is Jewish stuff. Give me my verse. There is a comment. I wanted to read it because it was really funny. I shouldn't say it was funny. It was a footnote in this Jewish Bible. Lot's daughters, Moab and Ammon, the roots of a Jewish monarchy. That blew my mind when I read that verse, and then I understood. Moab and Ammon, the roots of a Jewish monarchy. Making any sense? Ruth was a Moabitess. And so now all of a sudden it did make sense. I thought, man, they're really crazy. Well, they were in a sense, but that's what they say. Now I want to read. It says, Lot's daughters were modest, righteous women whose actions were nobly motivated, thinking that the rest of the world had been destroyed in the upheaval of Sodom, and that even Zoar had been spared only while they were there. They felt it was their responsibility to save the human race by bearing children, even though the only living male was their own father. Because their intentions were pure, they merited that among the descendants would be Ruth, ancestress of David, and Naamah, the queen of Solomon, the mother of Rehoboam, his successor, and the next link to the Davidic chain. Lot, however, was different. His intentions were not at all sincere. Even though he was intoxicated and unaware of what he was doing the first night, he knew in the morning what happened, but allowed himself to be intoxicated again, knowing full well what the result would be, as reference to Rashi. Unlike his daughters, he knew from the angels that the upheaval was to affect only a limited group of cities, not the whole world. I guess that's a Jewish interpretation of it. That's why I had to put that question in. I don't believe they're right at all, and I don't think those daughters were that upright and pure. And anybody that makes their father drunk can do that in that matter. So let's read on. I stopped right there in the middle of, I mean at the end of 31. They say, come, let us make our father drunk with wine, and we will cohabitate with him. And I'm going to translate it that way. That we may preserve the seed of our father. You see, that's lineage. And they use that as an excuse. And they made their father drink wine that night. And the firstborn went in and lay with her father. And he did not know when she lay down, nor when she arose. Now I translate the word perceive as know. He did not know. It's yadat, to know. And interesting, complete action verb. And it came to pass, or came to be, on the morrow, that the firstborn said unto the younger, behold, I lay last night with my father. Let us make him drink wine tonight, and go in and lie with him, or cohabitate with him, that we may preserve the seed of our father. And they caused their father to drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, or cohabitated with him, and he perceived not that she had cohabitated, nor when she arose. Thus were both the daughters of Lot impregnated by their father. And I'm translating again so we can see what had happened. When they say we're with child, it's one of the stages of, it's being pregnant, made pregnant. And that's why I translated it that way. Hebrew is a language that goes through every phase of childbearing almost. Clear down to the labor. Heel are words for labor. Writhing is a word. It's also used to dance in Hebrew. Verse 37, and the firstborn proceeded to bear a son and called his name Moab, the same as the father of the Moabites to this day. And the younger, she also bare a son and called his name Ben-Ami, and the son of my people. There are some other ways they take that. The same is the father of the sons of Ammon unto this day. And so this is what happens. Righteous Lot didn't, I smile at the way the Jews like to take it. He didn't get smart after the first night, and he got drunk. It seems like alcohol caught some other person in trouble. Remember? Nuach, Noah. He got drunk. And here Lot does. And this is what happens. Now we end up with the two progenies. It's interesting, the word Moab in its two forms, Moab and Moabite, is found almost 200 times in the Old Testament, 196 times. There are prophecies against Moab, and there are problems with Moab. Moab and these two groups of people are gone until Israel comes out of Egypt. And they're coming into the land of promise, and what happens? They end up skirting, and they were not treated well by Moab or Ammon. And so they are, he says, don't whip up on them, don't beat them up for not feeding you and not letting you go through their land. But you can't let them in the temple, and you have all of these issues. They're called brothers in those passages. But they become a thorn in Israel's side. And the next thing you know, you've got Balaam and Balak. And Balak is a king, a Moabite king. And Israel is always having trouble with them. And if you read the history, it goes back and forth. Ammon occurs about 28 times. Close, I'm within 2 to 4 on that. And the Ammonite. That tells you a whole lot about the issues. Again, there are prophecies and the major prophets against Ammon and with Moab. And it's interesting when you see those as God is going to judge them. And this whole thing, so did we meet Righteous Lot in here, or was this some other guy? Didn't sound like he was too righteous, does it? I mean, can you imagine this guy? I mean, here he is. He's in this terrible place. He makes his home there. He settles down there. He's thoroughly among them. He is a leader among them. He has children there, and he raises his children. You know, it's kind of interesting sometimes the environment in which somebody raises their kids affects the way the kids are. And that's exactly what happened to Lot's kids. His sons didn't go with him. His daughters and sons-in-law would not go with him, the married ones. The virgins were still under his thumb, so they went with him. And they weren't exactly nice people, because they had no scruples about what they did. Incest was not a problem with them. Incest was not a problem in Sodom or Gomorrah. It was not a problem. And so they had been affected. And so what happens? Lot takes them. He loses his wife on the way out because she stopped and stood and looked. And so you have that situation. I was smiling. I got a book the other day. I don't know whether it was a good investment or not, but it was a book on the influence of the King James Version on the English language. And I got to the, I just was reading the Genesis material as I went along, and the pillar of salt thing has not really affected our language. In fact, I looked at it because I wanted to see this Lot's wife thing that I mentioned. Because when we were growing up, the Navy guys always would talk about Lot's wife. You know, and using, that was salt. That's the Lot's wife. And these were guys that I knew that were in the Navy from World War II that would use that. It was kind of interesting. Now, that book said they couldn't find it affected the English, the pillar of salt had affected the English language at all until he found there was some kind of a sign in England that was called the pillar of salt. And so that's pretty minor. But anyway, he loses his wife. He goes to argues with God, goes to one of the cities of the plain, really risking his life. It's still beyond me. And then he's afraid, so he goes up in the mountain like he was told to, seems shortly, and then he gets into this circumstance where he produces two groups of people who inhabit land that is identified by them. Moab was probably the more refined. When Ruth was in Jerusalem, she could look on a clear day and look across the Dead Sea, across the Arabah, and could see the hills of Moab from which she had come. It was interesting. It had to be a real clear day, which now doesn't happen over there very often on that, and she could see that land, and they were productive. The Ammonites, on the other hand, a little bit more what I want to call them, a little wilder people, and they were more deserty people. They were, Moab was down the south end of the Dead Sea on the east side going north, and then Ammon was a little bit more east and up further on that. See if I had a map, I could show you that. But it's okay, it's not going to affect your sanctification in that matter. Okay, so I think there's some interesting things. Only God knows what Lot was like. He decided to tell us when he got to 2 Peter. They tell us back there. You could see some things that maybe were hints, but there was no indication this guy was going through mental anguish over the wickedness of those cities. None at all. But God tells us he was righteous. And he had a righteous soul. Those emotions that were being expressed as he was worn down and as he was tormented, remember the two words, those emotions were going on through everything we're looking at. So, let's remember the Lot of 2 Peter instead of Genesis. I think that would be a little bit more helpful. Thank you, Father, for this opportunity today again. May you continue to bless us as we think on these things in Christ's name. Amen.